We're the Pragmatic Doulas.
This is a podcast where we talk all about birth and other interesting things.
Birth may be a goddess, but she doesn't want to be worshipped. She wants to be respected. She doesn't want incense. She wants
common sense. Right, here we are. The Pragmatic Doulas.
Yes, that's us.
My name is Kim. I am a pragmatic doula.
And my name is Suzanne. I'm a pragmatic doula.
Well, I like to follow the crowd, so I am and I too am a pragmatic doula.
Sometimes following the crowd is pragmatic.
You're going to be pragmatic whether you want to be or not.
Yes.
Pure pragmatic pressure.
Right.
I suffer from the three P's.
Could be worse.
Could be worse. Yeah.
All right. Let me do the land acknowledgement and then we can jump into this because so much is going on in our world and our lives and all of that stuff. So let's do this. It's not fancy like the others that we've had. I'm sort of my life is pretty much a giant crapshoot at this point. So I'm going to go with my old standby and then we'll figure something else out later. Where are we here? I would like to recognize and acknowledge the land upon which I live, raise my children, work and support birthing parents is the traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabeg, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples, and is now home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples. While a land acknowledgement is not enough, it is an important social justice and decolonial practice that promotes Indigenous visibility and is a reminder that we are on settled Indigenous lands. Let this land acknowledgement be an opening for all of us to contemplate a way to join in Indigenous movements for sovereignty and self-determination. I don't know if you guys know this, but at like just before 7 o'clock every day on the radio, they do a land acknowledgement.
What station?
It's been a couple of them. So Boom does it. 93.5? I can't remember the first one on my list. And I think 92.5. So whenever I've been in the car taking Thomas to work because I drop him off just before seven, there's always a land acknowledgement at just before 7 o'clock.
Interesting. That's
pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. You'd think they would do that on CBC radio.
They might.
I mean, I don't know if they do. Yeah, they might. They might
do it at the beginning of the broadcast day or whatever.
Yeah. They might do it before Metro in early Metro morning. Metro morning starts really early, like at 5:30 or something. So I'm not up listening to it at that time. Do you know, I don't have a radio in my house. I want a radio in my house. And it is very hard to find one.
I don't have a... Actually, I do. Paul bought my daughter one for Christmas. Her birthday, I think, because she actually has CDs. The K-pop groups that she listens to put out albums, which are like, you know, basically books and things like that. But they also come with CDs. So she wanted to have a CD player radio. And he got one in the summer for her.
I've looked and looked on. In like what used to be Radio Shack and now is The Source and all these other places. And you can get things that have a radio component, like a CD player or whatever. I just want a plain. Jay has, a friend of mine, has just a radio and it's a cute little, and has a nice sound, really good sound. And she said she's had that for several years. And I took a picture of it and I've taken it to several places and they're like, nope, we don't have that. Just a radio with a nice sounding speaker. I don't want, people are like, well, you can get this thing and you can put your phone on it and it has Bluetooth and then you can put the radio app from, I don't want that. I want to press a button and turn on a radio.
Yeah. Just and not have radio. To turn on my car to do it.
Yes.
I haven't had
that for a long time.
I actually have for, you know, the apocalypse. I have a small handheld antenna radio that runs on batteries, just in case.
Like a transistor radio.
Yeah, basically. It's about this big.
Yeah.
And it's pink. It's fucking cute as hell. It has a little belt clip. I don't know where the fuck I got it from. But yeah, that's the extent of my prepping. So
the radio that Jay has is so nice and it has such a good sound. And she leaves that radio on for her pets when she is gone for the day. She leaves the radio also for people who happen to be nosing around her house or whatever. And I love it. My radio would be on all the time if I had it. It would probably drive my kids crazy. But I love radio. I haven't given up on radio. And I'd like to be able to listen to the radio other than when I'm in my car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
So, I don't know. The hunt is on. There you go. My birthday's next week, listeners.
Oh. Of course, this is going to be aired 2 weeks from now. But yeah, her birthday was...
My birthday was last week, but it's okay. I accept presents all year round. Christmas is coming. So yeah. Stephanie, are you there?
Do you have a radio?
I'm here. You know what? My radio is packed away. We actually have a whole, like you said, press a button, stereo system, the hand knob where you turn it to get to the right.
Yeah.
Of course, this is my husband. So he has the fucking, the speakers that are supposed to go with it and shit like that all hooked up. But it's one of those old timey, you actually need a stereo unit. Radio attaches to a cassette tape player and all wired together and shit like that. Mm-hmm. But it's in storage. So much of our stuff is still in storage because we're waiting for the rest of our renovations to finish. We just found out that still, this is what's hilarious. Let me just share my little renovation rant with you. We found a sink that we really liked. And we were very conscious to also buy all Canadian when we were renovating the house. Patroned clients and places that built here in Canada. So we found it. We found the sink. It's just a fucking sink, people. And it's a sink. It was in stock. So we thought, great. But again, there was this particular look of a vanity, like the cabinet part that Roger wanted. So we got it custom made. We found this little guy who builds custom cabinets and had it built around the specs of this sink. So we thought that was going to be the part that took long. No, it's been sitting there for over a month made, but because of COVID and the shutdowns in Quebec, the sink hasn't even been made yet. A stock item because they don't have enough people who are back in the workforce yet to actually make them.
Oh, shit. Oh my Lord.
So we talked finally yesterday to the people who we ordered through and we canceled that order because if it hasn't even been made yet, we don't know when it's going to be made. They keep pushing it back by a couple of weeks. And thankfully the people that we ordered through offered to have a custom made sink built for us to the same specs without it costing us more. It should have cost us a lot more because custom made, but they felt so bad about guaranteeing this without talking to them first. It really was, from a business standpoint, you don't guarantee something unless you've actually talked to the supplier.
Yes. Yeah.
They are going to have one built, not the sink we wanted, but they're going to have one built to the specs of our cabinet so we can just finish this fucking renovation. I would like a functional, because right now I have to go to the bathroom in my bathroom and then walk down to my laundry room to wash my hands after. I have no sink. I have no cabinets. There's piles of toilet paper on the floor. There's a big hole in my wall. I just need it done.
What's hilarious is you sit here and talk about custom made cabinets and getting a sink and custom made. And I actually have toilet paper on my floor. I buy the big, huge bag ones with 200, I don't know how many bags. And it's pressed up against the wall because that's beside the toilet, because that's the only place that it'll fit. I'm like, what? I don't know what it's like to, and I'm not saying, this is literally nothing against you, Steph. I'm not saying any of that at all. It's just, I can't fathom any of that. I got windows. I got So I got a brand new window many years ago.
Yeah.
That took me so long because the center window itself is so big. And I bought Canadian, but I literally went to like the Home Depot.
You went to the Home Depot.
Went to the Home Depot and the Home Depot people came and they measured and then they put a window in. And that's like, I was telling you guys, I really want to get the backyard done next spring. I really want a new backyard. I also need a new bathroom and whatnot as well, but I don't know how to do any of that. I don't know how to do that. Yeah. I am 51 years old. And I don't know what the fuck I'm doing with this house. Like,
You're living in it. That's what you need. That's the prime. You're fulfilling the primary function. It's like breasts. The primary function of your mammary glands is to provide sustenance for the young of our species. And everything else is extra.
Yeah. Like, I literally wouldn't know how to hire anybody. This is why I want to get my backyard on like a TV show. So that somebody could just come in and do it for me because I really don't know. Look, here's a blank slate. Y'all do what you want to do and I'll deal with it. I don't care what the hell it looks like. But that.
Yeah, I can't. That's all that kind of stuff scares me too. Is he one of those guys that like that stuff is easy for him? Like, no, this is the wrong thing for this space. We can't accept this shoddy quality. Meanwhile, I'd be like, yeah, okay, that looks pretty good. I don't know. So I would need a guy like that.
Or is it you, Steph, that does this? Like, is it you?
Because John wasn't like that.
Follow-up stuff, I do the planning stuff. So like I went and found the contractor because it's actually an Ontario-based website where they vet all the contractors through the Better Business Bureau and stuff. And they list those contractors can list their services on the site where they live in conjunction to you, their average price point, and you can submit what you want done to the site. They will send you back three quotes from the three closest people to you. And you can decide, and then you can go to their websites and see their actual before and afters, their actual timelines, and then you can decide who you want to work with.
You need to send me that information as soon as possible because my mom wants her bathroom done. And she only knows one person and she's terrified too. She doesn't know.
I have so much of my life when I was married and we had a big house, we had so many things, so many renovations done on that house, but we use like friends of friends.
Yeah.
Trust me. That's not, don't do that.
No. Like don't I know me. Somebody who's like a contractor and stuff.
Yeah.
No, I don't want you in my house.
Don't do it. It never works out properly. Never works out properly. Everything that we did ended up being like 8/10 of the way done.
Oh no.
Everything you're almost there. We did, except for the kitchen, because we actually hired not Home Depot, but like IKEA, like a company.
Yeah.
Come in to do the whole thing, so then they have to see it through from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. You and then it was done well. But yeah, here's advice to people out there: if you need your bathroom, kitchen, or whatever done, just gotta have the money to hire the company to come in and do it. People who have to, they're legally contracted to come in to start it and finish it completely, because your buddy's cousin is going to have something he can't come on Wednesday because of this and that, and he can't finish because of this and that. But when you use like the Home Depot or somewhere like a company, they have backup and they take those things seriously. So I don't envy. I've been through that where we had to, there was like a little dinky gross bathroom in the basement. And that's where I would have to take like my toddlers to pee in the morning while our real bathroom was getting done. And when the kitchen was getting done, oh my God, that was a nightmare. We literally washed dishes in the bathroom sink because there was no way to not wash dishes with seven people in the house.
Oh God, no.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, I have to say good things about IKEA has done my friend's parents' bathrooms and kitchens. They went in, the design service is free. You literally sit there and give them the measurements of your kitchen or your bathroom.
Yeah.
Tell them kind of what you're looking for functionally. They'll give you some functional items because it's fucking IKEA. Their key is putting good functional shit in a small space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They will build it up for you, give you a quote. You can figure out how you can budget it and over what period of time you can pay for it. And they have vetted IKEA installers.
Yes. So
it is worth it to just have a name behind it like that, like Home Depot. Yeah.
100%. I would never do anything in my house. And if that day ever comes, right, I live in a co-op, so everything gets done for me by the co-op. But we had an amazing experience with IKEA. We gave them the measurements and we were able to fiddle around with it. And it was fun. It was actually fun because all the pressure was taken off of you. Mm-hmm. I mean, you pay, but you also can choose, you know, IKEA. They've got like the cheapest cheap and then the, you know, high end stuff. So you have lots of options. So it was really good. So yes, I concur. I second that IKEA thing. If you need that kind of service, find somewhere like that that's gonna help you. Yeah.
No, I have to say excellent things about the quality of the work that has been done in my house.
That's good.
But I am not used to the approach. Like the guys who worked in our house did amazing work. However, well, besides they're busting a leak and flooding my house. But,
but they fixed it.
They fixed it. However, I'm also working with people who culturally take a lot of breaks. It's very normal for them to take a lot of breaks, lots of smoke breaks and coffee breaks and chatting breaks. And if you start chatting with them, we'll spend half the day chatting. So you have to like completely, I found they had to completely redirect when they had something they wanted to chat about. Because they would, you know, offer to get coffee and sit down and relax. I'm like, no, I want my bathroom done.
No, you need to be finished.
Yeah. And redirecting them when there were things that weren't correctly done. There was some ego I was dealing with for sure, like some gentle man ego who felt that it was their artistry that was being impacted. And I was like, dude, I'm talking about function. Like literally, if you want to talk about style and look, talk to my fucking husband. I need this to work like this. You know, I don't care what it looks like. I just need it to function. I need to be able to beat the fuck out of it and have it function well. I don't like pussiness in the sense of it. Like, I don't want to pitter patter around you. I need this shit to work. And that was not well received. I could see on their faces, but they also didn't mouth back to me because, you know, I'm asking them to do a job. But, and I'm a kind person. I am, but function.
Yeah. Function. Well, it was funny. We had, when I was married, because I'm now divorced.
Yes,
yeah, came today. When I was, when we were going to have, this was like maybe 10 years or more ago, we were going to do a renovation on the house. And we were going to have like make the living room like bigger, have more space, you know, things like that. I can't remember the whole deal. But one of the things that I had that I was really, really, I didn't really care how it was done or when it was done or whatever. But what I really wanted was I still wanted the house to look like the rest of the neighborhood. I didn't want to have one of these, like, you know, I live in a 1950s suburb with lots of little low back splits and things like that. And I didn't want to have this like monster house that stuck out like a sore thumb. And it turned, and I was very adamant that I wanted the integrity of the front of the house to still look like the rest of the neighborhood. The men, the male architect and my husband weren't hearing what I was saying. I'm like, okay, but you're not listening to me. Like, this is important to me. I don't give a shit what the hell else you do, but I need the house to look like the rest of the neighborhood. I don't want to look weird. But turned out that we couldn't actually extend the front of the house because of bylaws, because it couldn't go, the front of our house couldn't go beyond the front of the neighbor's house. And it was already beyond the front of the neighbor's house. So we couldn't go any further than we were. So that meant doing something either up or back, and we, none of us could agree on anything. So it was like, well, you know, maybe that's for the best. Maybe we're all good now. So what is our topic today?
We've been doing a lot of talking using words, using language. So why don't we just continue on that and just add some birth into this discussion?
So we had, this had come up yesterday, I guess. And we were talking and how doctors and nurses, not necessarily, well, yeah, I've heard nurses say these things too. Not Sabrina. But we've certainly heard people say, and we've heard clients express these things when they say, you know, I couldn't do a vaginal birth. My baby wouldn't fit. I ended up having a cesarean because, you know, I couldn't fully dilate, you know. And while these words are they seem innocuous, what they're actually hiding underneath is that sort of vague hint, maybe not so vague, hint that your body's broken, that your body didn't work the way it was supposed to. And I've heard birth people say, you know, you can't say things like your body was designed to do this because sometimes it doesn't happen. And I almost worry about that one too, because then it indicates that the body, again, that the body failed. But in reality, none of that is necessarily true. When we think about, you know, if we look at the reasons for, let's say, for example, we look at the reasons for a cesarean birth, it was after an induction and you couldn't, the cervix didn't fully dilate beyond a certain point. That's not your body failing. That's the induction failing. That's the induction not working. That's not your body not doing what it was supposed to do. It's that the induction that tried to get your body to do something it wasn't ready to do didn't work. And I always say in my class, like, look, cesarean births are not necessarily failures. Stuff happened, good things happened, and we have to focus on that stuff. And we can't look at things. I hate that term failure, false, any negative language surrounding birth, because when care providers do this, it plants those seeds of doubt in our head that there's something wrong with us, that there's something wrong with our body. And as I mentioned in the post that I told you guys, like, I'm going to say this as women, because that's where my experience is from. But as a woman, I have been told, as a girl, I've been told my whole life that there's something wrong with my body. It's too thin. It's too fat. You're too short. You're not tall enough. You're XYZ. You're not blonde. You're this, you're XYZ, whatever. And I've been told my whole life that there's something wrong with my body. And then I get into labor and they say, you know what? Your baby's not going to fit. Your body can't birth this baby. So there is something wrong with my body. And at that point, then your brain starts going off on a tangent. There's definitely something wrong with me. You fight these feelings your whole life of mental health and, you know, that there's something wrong with you. And then suddenly, yeah, now it's proven there's something wrong with me. When in reality, that's not true. And this goes, I'm sure, to, you know, postpartum depression. And I mean, we've all seen the numbers of postpartum depression, not just because of COVID, but in the years leading up to that, we've seen, telling me that postpartum depression only affects, you know, 10 to 15% of birthing parents. No, I don't believe that at all, because we see it in the chat rooms. We see it from our clients where, you know, my body failed. This didn't work. And now, you know, it's never going to work. What?
Yes, and might I dare say that the kind of language that's used during pregnancy, during prenatal care, kind of language that's used during labor absolutely has a direct impact on literal outcomes because this came up for me yesterday when somebody that I know gave birth via cesarean after an induction that didn't work, after the Pitocin didn't work, mm-hmm. right? But when I messaged them to say, how's everything going, blah, 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 I was told by the birthing parent's mother, her pelvis is too narrow, just like mine. She's run into the same trap that I did. Her pelvis is too narrow. And now they're prepping her for a C-section. My brain exploded. Oh my God. How did they know her pelvis is, how do you know her pelvis is too narrow? Like, I didn't ask that, but in my head, I was like, did they do whatever it is that they can do to measure her pelvis and compare to the baby's? No, they didn't, because I know they don't do that. Mm-hmm. That's just a conclusion that this mother made about her daughter, because that's what she was told 30 years ago, mm-hmm. that her pelvis was too narrow and she wouldn't be able to birth vaginally. So she needed to have a C-section. So she had two C-sections. Okay. I'm pretty sure, I bet that whatever it is that they need to do to measure her pelvis and her baby at that time also didn't happen. But the problem was that there was so much talk for the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. There was constant focus on the size of this baby, of course, with the baby being too big. Ultrasound showed the baby being 8 pounds 2 weeks ago. Over 8 pounds. The ultrasound showed 2 weeks ago that the baby was over 8 pounds. Panic set in. How in the world am I going to be able to allow my baby to continue growing for another 2, maybe 3 weeks? And I'm going to have like a 12-pound baby to push out if that happens. So much focus on this baby being too big. There's the word. Too big. Too big, meaning wrong, abnormal. Mm-hmm. Because the statement of this is a big baby this is a bigger than average baby is simply a statement of fact. There's no value added to that.
But that's right. You say that baby's too big, and now suddenly in your brain, it's not going to fit because it's
and too so big. Because the baby is possibly going to be too big, we must have an induction.
How big was the baby?
8'1".
See?
2 weeks after the ultrasound said that the baby is over 8 pounds. So the baby didn't gain any weight in the last 2 weeks?
The baby went on a diet and lost some weight? What the hell?
Just press pause. Because if a baby is 8 pounds, supposedly 8 pounds, 2 weeks before birth, that baby's going to gain a little bit more weight in those 2 weeks. But no. So therefore, that baby was not 8 pounds.
Exactly.
But why are we even talking about that?
Doing that.
Why are we talking and then talking about the baby is really big or too big? And therefore we have to make these decisions. And so the decision is made to have an induction and your body is not ready. And bodies don't like to be forced to do things that they're not ready for. No. And so the oxytocin, the Pitocin gave it all it's got, but her cervix was stronger than the oxytocin is the way that I see it. Her cervix said, I'm not fucking being forced to do shit. Keep, bring it. And I'm not listening to you. Her cervix was saying, nope, we have a plan. So until you stop this, let us go on with our plan. But we don't, we keep pushing and pushing. And so then at the end of the day, you need a cesarean. You actually need it because now you're
watching it because your body didn't do what it was supposed to do.
Right. And now
your body didn't get in line.
You can't go home. And now there's D cells.
Yeah.
Because of this artificially induced contractions. So now,
probably after 24 hours is probably like the highest it'll go.
Language. And it was 24 hours of lots of contractions. And that's basically all that was happening.
And now you go home with this idea in your head that your body can't birth a baby. Your body cannot vaginally birth a baby. And that is not necessarily true.
She was so devastated. She was so devastated. She couldn't even speak to me.
Right?
Yeah. She was crying so hard. She couldn't speak to me. How disappointed she was. Her whole this is another problem. Her whole focus this whole pregnancy was trying to avoid the trap that her mother was in. And there was no proof that her mother's pelvis was too narrow 30 years ago. And there's no proof that your pelvis is too, it's your fault because your pelvis is too narrow. So what does that do? It sets her up for surgical birth every single, not that there's anything wrong with surgical birth, but again, it's major abdominal surgery that should not be entered into lightly.
And the thing is like, my big concern is that, again, we've now planted those seeds of doubt in their head. And now from here on in, from this point on, she's always going to second guess their own body.
Yeah.
Always going to second guess what it's doing.
Yeah.
And it's not just birth. It's breast cancer, cervical cancer, any other medical conditions that might come up from here on in. You're always going to second guess what your body is doing. And that's completely unfair.
Why is there... What'd you say, Steph?
I'm just going to jump in on this a little bit. So what also happens, I find, and I found this in my own head, and I realized I had to check myself, was last year I went to an induction. And no, 2 years, right before COVID, right before like we got kicked out of the hospitals. I went to an induction. And we walked in there. This was a client who had was a single parent by choice, who had chosen induction after IVF, who had was right at 40 weeks. That's where they had wanted to have their induction done. And we got in there and they started with the Foley. Great, right? Get you to 3, almost 4 centimeters. And then when it fell out, then the plan was to start Pitocin. So we start Pitocin. And when people ask me, when do you come during an induction? And I always say, as soon as they're talking about starting PIT, because some people will have a slow grade increase in the need for support. Other people go from 0 to 100, not dilation, but intensity right away. So within an hour of PIT starting, I like to be there so that you don't feel like you're crawling out of your skin. Mm-hmm. So I came down when they were getting ready to start PIT, and we literally sat there and stood up and sat down and went to the bathroom every 30 minutes and did all the things one would do in labor, but there was no labor. Literally, the PIT had zero effect. There was not a contraction. There was a little digestive upset. We went for 6 hours increasing that with no contraction whatsoever. Her body was just like, I'm not sure what you're doing, but I haven't received the hormonal message that it's time to let this baby out. The baby hasn't sent me those hormones that says they're quite ready. So we're just not going to react at all. You know, some people have the really intense Pitocin contractions, but the cervix just doesn't open. It's like, no, I haven't been told it's safe to let this baby out yet.
Yeah.
So it's like this wisdom of the body to not override its own hormonal mandates. No different than like getting pregnant, which can have struggles as well, or keeping a pregnancy. Sometimes it just will not over, it has some sort of hormonal mandate we cannot see, and nothing happened. So after 6 hours, we talked about a couple things with her care providers there, and said, you know, do we want to turn everything off and start again after you get some rest? She's like, I am rested. I haven't felt shit.
Yeah, exactly.
So that she was like, what's next? And they said, well, what we can do is, well, we want to empty you of Pitocin if there's some sort of desensitivity or something. So we did wait 2 hours, and then she decided with her care providers to break her water and add Pitocin. So
the water jet?
So there, because baby was still a little bit high too.
Right. Yes.
They're just like, well, we'll wait till baby's kind of sitting right on that cervix, get a few contractions going before doing anything. And so we did that. And again, nothing. No contractions. A little bit of discharge, a little bit of water, a little bit of digestive upset again. Not a single contraction for six more hours. We did visualizations. Because we also talked, did you go through any preparation, like in the sense of, do you know, connect to what your body is going to do to let a baby out? Because we know that sometimes the visualization or understanding of a baby exiting your body is, it's powerful. Mm-hmm. So we went through laying down and actual visualizations of a baby moving down, a pelvis opening, a baby moving out. We did all the things that sometimes it's mind and labor to encourage a process, and nothing, not a lick, not nothing. There was just no mandate. And then there was a schedule switch. So in comes Dr. Christian at Mount Sinai. And we hadn't had great language around all of this thus far. We'd had the hint that some bodies just don't open. Maybe your body isn't ready to do this. And your body.
Again, leading it back to the body.
Body,
right?
So Dr. Christian comes in. My client is emotionally exhausted. There's a lot of what the fucks being thrown around. And he's like, well, if we were sitting here and you said to me you were in pain and I gave you pain medication and you said you were still in pain, I wouldn't tell you your body is failing to use pain medication. I would tell you the pain medication is failing to help you.
Yeah.
And so in this case, your body, we're asking your body to open and give you a baby, and you're telling me your body's not opening and giving you a baby. So it's not because your body is not opening, it's not the problem. The medication is not working. Mm-hmm. So it was, and I was, of course, elated to finally have common sense commentary running here about the efficiency of medication, the risks because we had already broken water, and all of the options, including turning it all off, giving her therapeutic rest, like literally giving her some Demerol and Gravol, get a sleep, like a full sleep. Mm-hmm. Get mentally ready to do it all again tomorrow. And that I could leave, her sister would come and stay, and then I would come back the next day. And so we sat on that, we turned everything off, we sent out for food, we had a big meal. And then we ended up afterwards, she's like, I can't do this all again tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so he came back and he's like, well, you've had a good meal. We're going to wait till you've digested all of it. And the other option is C-section. He's like, and so we're going to be really conscious again to get you comfortable. And we're not going to start surgery till you say that medication is working.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here elated. And I'm like, I shouldn't fucking be elated. This should be the
message. This should be the norm.
That we're understanding that medication doesn't always work. It has nothing to do with the fallacy or a problem mm-hmm. with the body. And this is where we as doulas can really heavily influence the message with those gentle switches in the perspective. It's like when you're getting your eyes checked and they keep flipping the little lenses up till you find the right one.
Better, not as right good.
Because these people, and I don't mean this in a negative way, they are literally ensconced in the medical approach mm-hmm. and the language they have learned working in this bubble, mm-hmm. just as we often are ensconced in the doula world and in that bubble. And we can cross over and help them understand, well, it's just it's a failure of medication. Mm-hmm. It actually has, because you haven't had a contraction pattern and because this wasn't hormonally mandated by your body, we can just understand that your body's mandate is stronger than medication right now.
Yeah.
Yet that might mean that we end in cesarean because the goal today was to have a baby for whatever reason brought us here. So not a failure again.
Not a failure.
No, we've chosen a route, a medicalized route. What do they call it? We're trying to be medically positive mm-hmm. or medically moved.
Or neutral.
Cesarean is one way to be medically moved to have a baby. Mm-hmm. And of course, as Dr. Christian said, the exact opposite is possible too. Turning everything off, taking a break. You're well, baby's well, you have no fever. And sometimes we can bring those messages too. Well, what are all the options? Let's call our team back in and find out what all the reasonable options are right now. And make those conversations about a failure of a system, a simple act of the medication not quite working for you. It's not the right combination of medication for you, or quite literally, it's not stronger than your hormonal mandate, which really is empowering. And I'm not saying that there are some pelvises that won't pass a baby. Sometimes you've had an injury. Like I had a client who had a cesarean simply because breaking her tailbone and it healing poorly where it kind of stuck into her body more. The visual of her baby passing by that turned in tailbone, that literally she could feel inside her vagina and her rectum, it pressing in. She didn't want her baby moving past that. So she chose a cesarean section. She also didn't want to re-break, have the baby move through and break her tailbone again. Like it was all dislocated and then it healed poorly located.
I've been there.
So we can be medically positive and not have it take away the power from our clients.
And I mean, when you think about it too, I mean, I'm just going to play devil's advocate here for care providers, but let's say, or against care providers, let's just say they're saying these things because they're saying that what we did wasn't wrong. Your body didn't do what it was supposed to do. We did what we were supposed to do, but your body didn't work. And that's turning it around and taking the onus off them and putting it on the birthing parent. Well, fuck that noise.
This is that, and that leads into something that I was thinking too, is that our entire modern medical model of care is based on the premise that bodies get broken. That's why we need health care.
Yeah.
And those people are there to fix broken bodies. And even though birth is a natural physiological process that humans have, that's the only way we got here, have been participating in for hundreds of thousands of years, has been absorbed into the medical model of care, which says that we are here to fix broken bodies, which is different from lots of alternative medicines that say, that talk about wellness and have holistic viewpoints and work with bodies in different ways. So in one sense, we can't really blame modern healthcare providers who have that way of thinking and who speak in that way, because that's how it's all set up.
And it was set up that way from the very beginning when birth moved from the hospital.
Yeah.
And care providers were coming in and selling it as, you know, the safe alternative to having your baby at home, because look how clean it is here. Look how safe it is here. You know, we've got all these modern gadgets that we can, you know, save you from, you know, your birth and whatnot. And it's like, okay, yes. And I'm not saying, because look, I am one wholeheartedly, if I was ever having a baby again, would go the OB route. But I think we have to take a step back and always look at birth as it's not broken until it's broken. Like, we will fix what needs to be fixed when it becomes broken. We can't fix what isn't broken, because birth in of itself is not broken. Often there is times, yes, when we got to get in there for the health and safety of the birthing parent. But when they create those situations that are going to impede the health of the baby and the birthing parent, then you can't blame me for that. You can't blame my body for that.
Yeah.
My body did what it was supposed to do, which was keep me and my baby safe. So I mean,
it's perfectly possible. It is perfectly possible to address the unpredictability of birth and of the birthing process without blaming the body of the birthing person, by using different language and so on. But that takes a literal intentional switch in your brain, because we've all been conditioned to believe that medicine is about fixing things that are broken and the holders of the medicine are the saviors also, who are going to repair our broken bodies. And that's a viewpoint that is ingrained in all of us. And it has seeped down to birth, because birth now exists in the medical realm, mm-hmm. which is not all bad, because absolutely, people don't like die the way to the extent that they used to during childbirth. So yeah. I'm not, never would I say that that was a 100% bad shift, but like with so many things in life and throughout history, when the pendulum swings, Lord have mercy, it mm-hmm. swings whoosh, all the way to the other side. Could we not have left the foundation of birth where it was, with small bits of intervention from the medical community so people didn't die? Mm-hmm. So the unpredictability of birth can be managed by the tools and the knowledge that we've learned and gained through the centuries, but leave birth kind of where it is. That would have been an improvement. But again, it just doesn't work that way. In human nature is to have things swing all the way over to one side. And so we've carried that thinking right into the birth room.
But there's another thing. We haven't, for so many years, I say we, for so many decades and centuries, probably, the birthing parent has not been the center of the discussion. The birthing parent has not been centered in the birth itself.
Yeah.
Because listen, when you look at, for some reason I get a lot of tweets and whatnot that have to do with birth and from doctors and things like that, that I don't follow them, but for some reason they show up in my feed. And constantly I'm seeing, you know, oh, I just delivered my, you know, 400th baby. Oh, I just delivered blah, 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 you know. You had 400 babies? Are you telling me you delivered 400? Your vagina must be tired, because you know what? You did not deliver those babies. You were there to assist in the receiving of the baby from the belt, from the vagina. Mm-hmm. You did not actually deliver those babies, but because the birthing parent is never the center of the discussion, they're like over here. Whenever I hear that, I always think, well, they're over here and the doctor's here. No, we gotta start centralizing the birthing parent in this discussion and having them be the one that is actually delivering the babies. And again, refocus the way we talk about birth.
That's a great example of language is power.
100%. Every time I see it, I'm like, I'm always like scared going, because remember that time I got like flambéed by that one OB when I said, stay in your lane when it comes to breastfeeding. I tend to not, but I sit there and think, my God, you delivered 400 babies. Jeez, that's a lot of diapers. Like,
yep. And when you say, because when you use that term, I delivered, mm-hmm. there's the power right there. The power is now, the power, the praise, the credit is now on you.
That's right.
Language is power, people.
We don't say that. Doulas don't say that. We assist birthing parents in the delivery.
Yeah. I support birthing parents while they go through the birth process. That's my job.
Yeah. Support. I don't say, you know, I always say, you know, I've assisted 170 birthing parents in their birth journey.
And people often ask, how many babies have you delivered?
Three.
Whoa. Back up. Yes.
It was three.
Five. I've had five. I've delivered five babies. As a doula, zero. How many births have I been there to support the birthing family? Okay. That's different.
And I mean, people think it's stupid, but it's like, it's not. It's not.
Yeah. Language is power. Language is power. And again, we are conditioned to say that, to put the focus on. Here's another example of focus, which ends up with the power being where it shouldn't necessarily be. And I should have said this when Sabrina was on here, but I do say it in my class, people are surprised that the doctor if everything is going well, you might glimpse the doctor. They come in and say hi, hey, and then they leave, and they come in to finish up the delivery. They come in to finish up the delivery. They're there for the last part of the delivery. And I said, and I tell my classes all the time, oh, so you guys should be aware that your nurse will be your primary care provider while you are in labor. So if you're in labor for, 9 hours, your nurse is going to be the one doing your IVs, answering your question, all of those things. And then the doctor will come in at the end and assist in the delivery. But what do people say? Who delivered your baby? Oh, Dr. So-and-so. Nobody remembers Sabrina, who was there with you for all the hours since you were admitted.
Yeah.
Nobody remembers that. Oh, actually, this is the person that really helped us. It's always the doctor who gets the credit.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, when I had Will, I always remember the doctor because the midwife was shite. But I always remember the doctor because, she was so amazing and caring. But funnily enough, I don't remember from the other two, but I do remember the one nurse that sat with us while, when
like your nurse has to go out of her
hand.
Yeah. It's
that, but yeah, and that's but an I don't example remember language, the others.
Language being power also, because when we say who delivered our baby, and then we say the name of the doctor, all of the other support that you had is gone.
Mm-hmm.
All of it's gone now, disappeared. All of the hours that the nurse puts in.
Phew. And that's the hierarchy of the dynamic of language as well, right?
Yeah. 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 It's true. That's exactly it. So we need to be aware of that. It's not easy. And I struggle mightily and frequently with being self-aware and trying to use intentional language. It's not easy. It's far easier to just blah, 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 what you've been conditioned to say, believe, think, and whatever. It's far easier to just do that than to slow down and think carefully about the words that you use in situations that are vulnerable, that people are vulnerable in. So,
and birth is literally the most vulnerable time that you're going to have as a human. You can correct me and do whatever you want, but when you're there needing to let go and have your body do things that you never thought it was going to do and be that open to your body doing these things, that is the most vulnerable. And
you've got
people coming in, checking your vagina going, oh, I don't know about the space in there. Fuck, what the hell just came out of your mouth? What do you mean?
Yeah.
And now suddenly the weeds of doubt are growing in their head. What? What?
Yeah.
Guess what happens? Labor shuts down.
Yeah.
It's like, why was that necessary? Or do I say her name? Maybe not. That one doctor, the wizened old leather-legged lady with the gray hair, comes in after my client pushed out her baby and goes, congratulations, I really didn't think you could do it.
What does that do to that person's, that parent's mind for next time? It stays there.
The problem is that you didn't believe she could do that. The problem with the language for this client is that if a doctor comes in and says, there doesn't seem to be much space or whatever that thing is, it's like, well, thank God you're a fucking obstetrician who's had umpteen years of experience handling specialized situations, because isn't that what you're supposed to fucking do? Take a situation that is not streamlined and be able to manage that shit. Like mm-hmm. a tailbone that is twisted a little bit and sticking into that area, then you as the specialist should be able to manage an unusual situation. Not necessarily with surgery. You may be a surgeon, but you're also a specialist.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not an unusual thing to maybe have somebody who has a tighter fit, not musculature, but actual pelvis. Maybe they have a tighter pelvis or they have something in their hip. They might have a screw in their hip. I've had a client with two screws in her hip give birth vaginally.
So would it, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, what would be a better way? So let's say, for instance, there's a situation where baby's not descending and so on. What do you know how we would say, like cesarean section is birth, and we don't use the word normal birth, because then that presumes that there's, because yeah. what presumes that there's an abnormal way of giving birth and so on. So if an OB goes in there, or a nurse goes, is doing a check and they find that things are not ideal in there, would it be better to, this is just a thought I'm wondering, would it be better to blame, is it better to blame the body part by saying your pelvis is tight or small or narrow or whatever the case is? Would it be better to say, this process, blame it on, like, on the process? And it's certainly, I know the answer is not blame it on you. You're not making enough room for the baby. That's wrong. But yeah. Is it better to blame it on the process in general? Are we doing our, I mean, I tend to think yes, because birth is it's a idea. It's something we go through, but we can always say the birth process is unpredictable. The birth process is varied, and there's lots of diverse experiences that people have. So it's happening here. The baby needs to move down. But for whatever reason, this process, what we are doing right now is not working for the process. That's what I'm thinking would be, it feels kind of convoluted, but I'm wondering.
It feels less directional, right? It feels less, it feels less weighted. It feels less directed if we talk about in vague terms about the process of birth.
Yeah. And is that a bad thing, or is that fixing the problem we're talking about, or is that
what happens helping? Next time? Do they believe that the process of birth won't work for them again?
Right. So do we talk about their pelvis specifically, or can we speak about the, the pelvis or the cervix or whatever specifically without loading it with value judgment? Mm-hmm. How do we speak about somebody's cervix not dilating without blaming that person's body?
No,
so it's not easy. And I'm not, I certainly don't have the answers, but finding a way to speak about things that are happening that are not going the way we want them to, in a way that isn't loaded with judgment, value judgment, is hard.
And that's doesn't blame the baby either.
It doesn't blame the baby, and doesn't blame the birthing parent, and then doesn't blame the process of birth. Something's happening, and we need to find a way to describe it.
It's a process. It is, sometimes I speak with clients about the simplicity of we know a basketball goes through a basketball hoop, right? But what is required for it to actually get through that hoop? Sometimes we see that motherfucker bounce back and forth 3 million times before it actually goes through. Sometimes it's a
swoop. Goes around and whatever,
Right? So if your baby is not swooshing the way perhaps you were expecting it to, then guess what? We're going to shimmy you side to side. If we have taken out the option of a quick shimmy, like that you could do if you were unmedicated and were medicated, then this is where you have us. We're going to switch side to side. If you have enough strength, we're going to go over onto your hands and knees. We're going to shake the apples. We're going to help shimmy. And we're going to do things we can do. If you can't move the baby, move the parent, you know?
What if even that doesn't work?
Then sometimes it doesn't go in.
So I think,
it just doesn't go in. Sometimes there are things that we cannot see, much like hormones. We can't see those patterns. So we can be patient, but sometimes it just does not go through.
But I think I think there needs to be a way to say it without using the word necessarily blame at all. We're not blaming anything per se. It's a matter of, I don't know how I'm trying to figure out.
It's function. Sometimes it's not the body misfunctioning. It's the process. We're in a process. Sometimes we add things to the process, like medications and stuff, that change it. And so we're going to try and go around the mountain this way, and we're going to try and go around the mountain that way. And there's no blame. It's just, sometimes we get off route.
True.
we've taken a different route. And sometimes that comes with different challenges. It doesn't mean the journey isn't important. It doesn't mean getting here and trying all these things had any lack of necessity. It is it's a function, it's a process. And sometimes that process requires going another route, and that route isn't a failure of one process. It's just, it wasn't working that way, so we're finding the way for it to work. It's,
well, and I mean, we always see, we see Penny Simkin talk about, and I think she has like a graphic or something of this, you know, where, you know, that the road and the journey and, you know, the map, basically the labor map, right? And we have to, maybe if we look at it in the idea of, you know, we put in the destination in our Google Maps and we hit direction and we drive along. And then we have, you know, a thing pops up that says, you know, oh, construction ahead, roadblock ahead. Do you want to take this route or this route? And sometimes that route that we take doesn't lead us to the exact same destination. We're just sort of off. We're not at the vaginal birth side. We're at the cesarean birth. And we're still in the same city, but we're just down the block a little bit.
Detour.
We had to take a detour. And I think talking about things, as you say, in those non-value judgment ways, in talking about, you know, the actual function of things. And I think doctors and hospitals and whatnot need to admit, yeah, you know what? We tried to do it this way and it didn't work. So we tried to do it this way in order to do this based on the information we had, but it didn't work. So what we did didn't work. So we had to do this. But I think there's so much, and it's that malpractice life we live, that society we live in, that doctors are not willing to take that on to say, you know, we tried to do XYZ, but it didn't work. So we had to go over here and do ABC, because that puts the blame on what they did. And then does that open them up for malpractice, right?
Yep. So I love metaphor and analogy and all of that as much as the next. I love that, using examples of, you know, putting your destination into the GPS and seeing blah, blah, blah. I love that. And I think that that works fantastically for doulas who are speaking and have lots of contact with their clients beforehand, or childbirth educators speaking about with parents before labor starts. In a situation where labor is happening and this birthing person is in the hospital and the doctor comes in and, you know, something specific is happening, that's when the problems arise. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be time. Doctors are not going to be using metaphors and talking about destination and journeys and all of that kind of stuff in the birthing room when it's been 12 hours and this person, the cervix has not dilated. So I'm thinking to myself, I think it's got to be okay to say, you don't even have to say your cervix. You could say the cervix. The cervix hasn't dilated, or your cervix has dilated 1 centimeter over the last 12 hours. Okay. We like to see it, and forming a relationship, I think, is the key. Because when you form, this is what doulas do. We form relationships with our clients. So when things fall apart, when those big detours happen, we're there to say, yes, this happens. We're here to support you. We're here to help you. And that's what I think doctors can do, is to try their best in that little bit of time that they have while people are in the hospital to form a relationship. And we know, because we've seen OBs do it, and they make a big impact just by simply their attitude and the way they interact with everybody in the room. And then we've seen the opposite. So it is possible to say, we're in this together. We're all in this together. Sometimes things go the way we don't want them to, but we're all in this together. We're all here to help you get through this. Okay. The cervix hasn't dilated. You can say the cervix has only dilated one. You don't even have to say only. The cervix has dilated 1 centimeter in 12 hours. We would all have liked for it to have been fully dilated by now. So the question is, how much longer are we going to sit here waiting for it to do some more? Here's what I think some of our options are. Let's talk about them. Mm-hmm. See what that kind of talking. I think is the answer. Not your cervix hasn't dilated more than 1 centimeter. This is not what we want. So it's all negative words, not, don't, and so on. But there is a way to say that we would have liked things to be a little bit farther along by now, and they're not. So here's my opinion about how we think we're going to do. Do you need some time to think about that a little bit? All right. I'll come back in 10 minutes. Okay. So you guys take the time, holding your hand, take the time, and everything's going to be okay. We just need to figure out what to do next. That's how you do it.
I think the other thing too is like, let's consider as well. Sometimes we don't have that time. Sometimes we don't even have time to do that. Like sometimes we're talking about emergency situations where baby's D cells are declining rapidly and shit's got to happen fast. Okay. We're going to do what we need to do. And they're going to walk you through what's happening. But then afterwards, when it's all over and done with, the next 6 hours, the next day, you're going to come in, doctor, and you're going to sit down. And you're going to say, look, this is what happened. This is why we had to do XYZ. Baby, the Pitocin that we used was rapidly decelerating baby's heart.
Yeah.
They could not tolerate what was being done. We tried to shut it off. It was already done. And we needed to get your baby
up. We needed to make those decisions really quickly and acknowledge, I know it was scary. And I know you probably felt that, you know, we weren't consulting you. We had to do that because of the urgency of the situation, right? Do you know how much healing?
Do you have any questions?
That is a huge healing thing. My sister had her freaking COVID crazy crash C-section. The doctor, and was a doctor who's been in a lot of trouble anyways, that doctor came in the next day. And pulled up a chair and sat at my sister's bedside and said, this is what happened. And this is why we had to do it the way that we did. And I know it was scary. It was scary. Everybody was scary. Everybody was scared. Mm-hmm. But we did what we felt we had to do. And if you have any questions, please, please reach out. And that takes, so if you're here in this place of distress, and like full healing is over here, that one conversation with the person that you associate the most with that situation comes in, brings you that much further towards full healing.
Well, and that's what happened with Will, right? Like Will born with an Apgar of 2, you know, vacuum extraction. I thought he was dead, period. Like I thought he was dead. Code pink, the works. Yeah. The next day, Dr. Yu came in, sat down on my bed. She goes, you know, I was just in to see him. I went to see him first and see how he was doing. And he's looking really good. And I wanted to come in and talk to you about what happened. And mm-hmm. I wanted to know if you had any questions or if there was anything that you needed. And it was like, and I think that's why, despite it being an incredibly traumatic birth, I think that's why I never resonated it with being wholly traumatic, because she, like you say, she brought me closer to that healing. I didn't sit in that space of trauma. That
fear and trauma and questions and wondering, and then you go home and that stays with you forever.
Forever. I did not leave that hospital without her coming into me like a couple of times, actually, to say, you know, because he was in there a week, to say, you know, how are you doing? You know, blah, blah, blah. But that's the other problem that we have with obstetrical care. You're not seeing your doctor for like 6 fucking weeks after the baby was born, but you've still got the birth. Even if it was a beautiful, fantastic, amazing birth, 100%, you know, the angels sang and,
You
know, rainbows flew out of your vagina.
And the baby slid out of you like it was going down the lazy river ride at Wonderland and just showed up.
But you don't have that connection with the person who did the delivery because they're done. Yeah. Like they weren't even your doctor.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, they're not even your doctor. They're a complete stranger. and you just have to carry that home with you. So that, you know, we know that there's no attention to mental health in birth. We know that, but that's a huge part of the problem. So yeah. I think it's not just about language. It's about attitude. It's about approach, which we all know bedside manner is a huge part of doctrine.
Yeah. Right?
And the language that you use is a part of that. So is a part of your bedside manner. And doulas can help a lot. I think that one of the things that we should do is prepare our clients for the lack of positive language that's used, not just bedside manner, but the lack of the usage of negative language. Don't, not, isn't, too much, too little, all that kind of stuff. That means you're not enough or you're too much. That gives you those ideas. And explain the whole, this is the way the system works. Okay. So you've somehow got to fortify yourself against that. Mm-hmm. Because I know that already. If I were to have a baby in the hospital today with my experience and history and support, it would fall off of me like what? Unless it was like something grossly negligent. But I'm talking if it was just standard obstetrical care, I'd be like, yeah, okay. Just like I went to see that movie last night. The movie was mediocre, but Lady Gaga was phenomenal. That's why I went to the movie. So I'd go to the hospital. I'm going to the hospital because I'm a diabetic and whatever. That's my reason for choosing this. I'm not going there because I'm expecting Lavender Fields and the Heavenly Choir singing. I'm going there specifically for safety and to have access fast to the equipment that's there. Mm-hmm. And my mental health, my spiritual well-being, I'm going to take care of that in other ways. Because don't expect that at the hospital.
No. So
doctors in their own individual way could do that in their own individual practice. But I think we also need to prepare our clients for that not happening and realize that they need to provide their own fortification and their own inner whatever or outer whatever by hiring a doula and all of the other things that they need to do, because it's very likely you're not going to get that supportive language, positive attitude, blah, blah, blah.
It's no different going to emerge. You know, going when you go to emerge that you're not going to get a doctor, you know, you're not going to get stopped at your, and you're not going to know what the culture of that ER is that particular day, depending on the combination of staff. Because you could go one time and have a nurse or an OB who is like the shit, the bomb, you know, like just amazing on task. But then you get them a different day when they are with a different combination of people who do not lift them up, who have challenged them, who have depleted them. And you get a whole different person because we're people.
Yes.
We don't know the combination going in. So going in with a sense, not of combativeness, but just, I'm going to own this part because there is an unknown, and I'm going to pass this off to them because that is the shit they do. Mm-hmm. And it is not trying to create a negative. It's just, it's an unknown. So we can't assume wonderful things from an unknown, and we can't assume poor things from an unknown. So what we do know is what we can come in with. And
what we can bring for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. You made a great point about the diabetic thing. And this is where privilege comes in. When I am in some of these VBAC and HBAC groups, and people come in with, well, just stay home. Okay, but somebody who is has unstable diabetes, gestational diabetes, cannot. And they have the right. I say right, because we do have a right, a human right, to be treated with respect. And I don't mean like I respect you because you respect me type thing. I mean, to get accurate, just fucking accurate information when you're going in to make such big decisions about your personal health because you have unstable diabetes, and for your baby, without it being personal, without it being attacked, and without being made to feel like you're broken. But you have to go in also, it is fair to go in saying, they might not know how to give that to me. So here is how I can fortify myself to create an environment that lifts me up. And that might be having a doula. That might be having a friend who's also been through it and had unstable gestational diabetes, not unusual, and knows the right questions to ask that would have assisted them when they went in.
I love that analogy of the emergency room. I really do, because when you make a decision that you're going to go to the ER, you already are aware that the ER is a place where they manage crisis. Mm-hmm. You're not looking to go there for, you know, gentle, loving,
warm fuzzies.
Warm fuzzies. Yeah. You're not looking to go to the, you want answers.
Yeah.
You want safety, stability, and answers when you go to the ER. And if there's somebody who, you know, rubs your shoulder and, you know, gives you a little bit of reassurance, that's like gravy. That's like icing on the cake. But you want to know, am I having a heart attack?
Yeah.
And you don't need somebody to say to you, well, the heart, it's a journey. Nobody, you don't need that. You need somebody to say to you,
you're not having a heart attack.
You're not having a heart, or yes, you are. And here's what we need to do next.
Yeah.
Right. So you go into the ER. So you already know you got to take care of your own mental health. You got to take care of your own spiritual stuff. You're not looking for that when you go to the ER. Now, going to the labor and delivery is a different thing. Mm-hmm. And giving birth is a different thing. But I think a little bit of that pragmatism needs to happen. And I have said to my clients, you are either choosing to give birth in an institution, or you have to, because of other circumstances beyond your control, need to give birth in an institution. Institutions, the hospital, is not a place for you to go to expect the warm fuzzies, respect and dignity, of course. But maybe what we need to do is to be preparing our clients. And I do this a lot, especially people of color, and let it understanding, and we talk about systemic racism in the healthcare system and fortifying yourself against that and knowing when things are a microaggression and that there isn't a microaggression or whatever. Knowing that going in is very important for people of color. But it seems now like I'm looking at it from a different perspective, that it's important for everybody to understand that language is power. Not everybody knows that. And it is hard to use positive language that doesn't dilute the seriousness or the gravity of what might be happening at the moment. And that a lot of that has to do with relationship. You will much faster forgive somebody for using the wrong language if you have a relationship with them. If you feel like they care about you, right? You know, I have trans friends. Queer friends who I very often sometimes blah, 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 mess up in my language, but I'm forgiven much quicker because they know that I care and they know that I'm grappling with it all the time. And so when I kind of misstep, it's okay to, they can more quickly forgive me. That's what I think is missing, is relationship. And I'm not saying that doctors and nurses should be handing out warm fuzzies in the labor and delivery, because it's very often not possible, and not like, do they need more work on top of them? So back to us as doulas, preparing our clients beforehand for what they're not going to get in the hospital, what they can expect and what they need to prepare and bring for themselves.
I mean, my concern is how do you undo 30 years of body imaging that's fucked up in like the few visits that you're going to have with them, and then throw them into, it's hard. You can't, but I mean, I personally don't think it's unreasonable for, you know, an OB to walk in, pull up a chair. Let's talk. Because let's be honest. I mean, it's particularly at our hospital, I mean, they're not always delivering. Yes, there's going to obviously be certain times where it's not possible. But I mean, I had a client who was friends with one of the OBs there. The inexorbitant amount of time that she's been in that room talking to that client.
True.
Is mind numbing.
True. True. I had clients who were medical malpractice lawyer.
Yes.
And the partner was an emergency care pediatrician who had done residency at that hospital. Yeah. And absolutely the kind of care that they got
was probably astronomically good.
Fat was chef's kiss good.
Yeah. See what I mean? So don't tell me that it's not possible. Look, coming in, going, hey, how you doing? I'm going to stick my fingers in your vagina now. That's not gaining a relationship. That's coming in and sitting down, and maybe you're only spending 10 minutes, but holy fuck, that 10 minutes can be huge. That 10 minutes of saying, okay, so, you know, what are you hoping for here? I've read your birth plan. Okay. This all seems perfectly reasonable. Excellent. Thank you for creating that for us. My name is Dr. So-and-so. You can call me June. I will be here, you know, in and out until about 7:30 in the morning. If there's anything you need, you let me know. Okay. This is my resident here, XYZ. And if I'm not available, they're going to be available too. The nurse will come get us if you need anything at all. Okay.
I remember one doctor coming in to, where was this? I can't remember. I'm picturing the room set up and I can't remember what hospital it was at. It wasn't St. Mike's. And the doctor came in and said, wow, you look like you've got a great team here. Who do we have here today?
Right.
Before saying anything about what was happening, just look at this. Okay. So I know you are so-and-so, and pointed to the partner. And then me, I think the mom was there, the grandmother of the baby. Oh, look at that. That's fantastic. Well, I'm Dr. So-and-so. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening right now. And launched into the whole thing. That one respect. Little thing made us smile, made everybody smile, and remembered, I don't remember the hospital, but remembered that doctor, made such an impression, and lightened the mood, lifted the air.
Decentered themselves from the, because they introduced themselves last. Hello, birthing parent. That's who you are. And who else do you have here?
I also think that could be helpful for the hospital's purposes too, to know who's in the room supporting this person. If any kind of shit goes down and they need to do some kind of peer review process or dissecting of what happened, it is imperative to know who was there, who did what, who said what, and et cetera. So it also can serve other practical purposes too, not just about relationships. So that every single time you come in, and even if you stay, you put your hand on the person's hand and say, yes, I know this is hard, but it seems to me like you're doing really great. And I love what's happening there. So keep going or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it is right. Possible. Yes, absolutely.
I hate to do this, but I got to get my ass out of here. So we need to.
All right. Wrap it up.
I did want to say, so we do our sort of like shout out to doulas and stuff. So I did want to say, because I spend an exorbitant amount of time on TikTok now. Thank you very much. I did want to say, I've been following somebody called Sleep Easy Clinic. They're actually in Aurora, Ontario. Her name is Kenzie, and I say her, I don't know what her pronouns are. But I like their approach to sleep. It seems very common sense to me. They do sleep training and whatnot in Ontario. And I think I really do like sort of their whole approach to, you know, let's just do what's going to be right for you and not it has to be this way or the highway kind of thing. So if you are on TikTok and you want to follow Kenzie at Sleep Easy Clinic, I think that's, I think they're a good one too. So
perfect. Awesome. Well, we need more of that. We need more good, helpful, supportive sleep resources for new parents.
Exactly. And that's around language too. Your baby, like being careful, your baby isn't broken. Here's what we know about how your baby sleeps. Here's what we know about what brings them comfort and makes them feel safe. Mm-hmm. So let's go over what we know. There's not a problem. Sleep is not a problem. Everyone wants to sleep.
Yes,
but we all know that we can go way past tired into wired. And here's what that looks like for your baby. It's not broken. It's just human.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. They talk about the physiological sort of side of birth and whatnot. But I think what I like best is that she doesn't do it from this is how your baby is going to sleep. She's saying, I don't know your baby. Here are some things to try. But if I am working with you and I am working with your baby, we're going to work with your individual baby, because let's be honest, every individual is different too. So I kind of like that sort of approach from the whole thing as well. So yeah, there you go. Maybe I can get her on. We haven't had a sleep trainer on, really, have we? No.
That's right. That's a whole new topic.
All right. Yeah. I'll think about that. All right. I got to take my daughter to school. I have loved this conversation so much. I'm sorry, Steph, that you barely got a word in edgewise.
I'm exhausted, man.
Speaking of language.
Sorry you didn't get to use yours. but anyways.
We sensed that you needed a little bit of, rest. So
I did.
Good.
You're going to take a kid to school. Mm-hmm. I am going to pick a kid up from Mississauga. What are you doing, Suze?
I'm going to stay right here at this computer and get some work done.
Mm. Always.
For at least a half an hour, and then I got to go eat. Haven't
I
eaten
support yet. That.
At McDonald's for breakfast. So needless to say, Weight Watchers hasn't quite taken off yet. I barely made it through one day, but we'll try again next week.
That's right. There's always more opportunities to start over.
Exactly.
Build on it. You just got to build on it. That's all.
All right. Have an awesome day, everybody.
Bye. Bye, everybody. See you next week. Bye.